Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple. My name is Scott Pritchard, a professional sports bettor handicapper. I'm joined, as always, by Brett Grant. Happy Tuesday, young man.
Happy Tuesday, Scott. How are you?
I'm great. A lot of things to talk about. Major League Baseball, NBA playoffs. We're going to get started with what say you. Baseball game last night, the Mets blow it. The New York Mets. If you want to know what it's like to be a professional sports bettor, step in to my life. Last night, I had the Mets under 7, minus 20. Now, we handicap a game for 8.5, maybe 9 innings. If it goes extra innings, I mean, you just don't know. It's random. So what happens is the Mets are up 2-1 in the ninth. I have under 7, looking good, feeling good. Bottom of the ninth inning now. The Giants are batting. The Mets misplayed a routine ball in center field. It led to a run to make it 2-2. No run scored in the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th inning. I'm annoyed because I actually started watching the game thinking even I can't find a way to not win this game. So it's 2-1 in the 9th, 2-2 after 9. We go to the 15th inning. The Mets score 1. It's 3-2. We go to the bottom of the 15th inning. The Giants had not scored a run since the bottom of the
Marlins.
Yeah, since the bottom of the ninth inning. What have I been saying?
You said Giants just that one
okay.
time.
Okay, all right, cool. All right, well, I have tunnel vision. I'm annoyed with the Mets because they blew it. What happened was in the bottom of the 15th inning, Marlins scored not one but two. So there you have it, 4-3. Three runs scored in the 15th inning. Instead of having an easy winner, winner, chicken dinner, it was a big fat push. The winner. Mets blew it. What say you?
I had a winner.
What?
On the radio, on Vegas Video Network, I gave you as my right side over 6.5. And you taught me, Scott, it's all about when you bet the number. I got 6.5. You got 7. So you can have the push. I'll take the miracle W. I realize it was a miracle. But it was 6.5 earlier. The day before, I guess it just goes to show a little bit about when you get on the right side of a game.
Well, not only a little bit, but a lot, because key numbers. We talked before about in the National League, a total 7 is a key number. In the American League, with the DH, 9 is a key number. So, again, you either want to be on the move early or against it late. You want to be on and off key numbers. Here's a perfect example. Yes, I do remember you liking the over 6.5. I played under 7 minus 20. Perfect example of how the sports books, I mean, this is an exact science. The sports books, look at this. For instance, you bet over. I mean, that's the idea. You never want to be over 7 or under 6.5. You either want to be over the 6.5 or under the 7. You follow what I'm saying?
Understood.
So there's a fine, fine line between winning, losing, tying and winning, tying and losing.
And it was a miracle win, no question about it. It was a 2-1 game, as you mentioned. The Mets got the run, or the Marlins got the run in the bottom of the ninth. And you're thinking, and we talked about this yesterday, if the game ever got to 3-3, well, it did for a short period of time in the 15th inning. It got to 3-3. But the Mets, in the midst of now, I think a 5-game losing streak for the Mets as well. So they're finding ways to lose games.
Good teams will find a way to win. Bad teams find a way to lose. I guess the jury is out on this Mets team, but struggling here as of late.
But you were right in the right position then to watch the 19-inning game with the A's and Angels, which was even more incredible than the game yesterday between the Mets and the Marlins.
Well, it's interesting because I pride myself in tying up so much time in getting the best number, finding value, dissecting information, that it's rare that I'll watch a game. But last night, based on the fact that the Mets were up 2-1, it's like, okay, I'll go ahead and check this game out. A 9-inning game turned into 15 innings. It's like, well, okay, well, I'm already up past my curfew. So I thought, okay, I'll dial over and catch the A's taking on the Angels. And that game went 19 innings. It finished. I went to bed at 1:40, about 3 minutes after the game ended.
Right.
19 innings, the A's with a two-run dinger in the bottom of the 19th inning.
Here's the interesting thing about the game. 10-8 final, A's, 19 innings, 6 hours and 32 minutes, also known as the average length of a Red Sox-Yankees game, just in
right.
case you're 11,668 fans in the buildings, 16 different pitchers, 18 runs, 31 hits, 597 pitches in the game, 17 different players with hits, not named Josh Hamilton, by the way, who was 0 for 8, 5 home runs, two for Moss, including the game winner, two for Pujols. There's also four injuries in the game. Both center fielders left the game with injuries. Young left the game. Another outfielder for the A's left the game. And Anderson, who was pitching five and plus innings of relief, left the game with an injury in the game. And Josh Hamilton, 0 for 8 in the game, is averaged now above barely the Mendoza line at 202 on the season.
During the extra innings in that contest last night in Oakland, the A's against the Angels, Josh Hamilton, I mean, it was easy to see why. It's not easy to go 0 for 8, but it was because he just was swinging at anything and everything.
That's what he does. He's very undisciplined when it comes to, especially this April. I've watched him a lot. I've watched a lot of the Angel games because we talked about it. The A's have been a dead over team. The Angels have played a lot of overs. So I had the over in the game yesterday, which is weird because it was a total of only 8. And the game was, Angels, by the way, blew a 5-run lead. They're up 7-2 in the 7th inning and blew the lead and eventually lost the game. But you watch Hamilton, and I've watched him all spring. He is very undisciplined right now at the plate. He's swinging at everything, and you can get him out with pitches that are nowhere near the strike zone.
Of course, it's easy to say now that the total was 8, but we've been talking on the Odds Couple the past few weeks that these two teams are dead over teams. I believe the A's going into yesterday were 21-5 or 6 over, and the Angels have been a dead over team because they hit the ball, but their pitching is questionable, and we saw that again yesterday. I mean, no lead is safe with that Angels bullpen. I mean, they were up, the A's scored 4 in the 8th, 1 in the 9th. So they blew a 5-run lead in the last two innings.
Well, and here's the interesting thing tonight. Each team used 8 pitchers in the game yesterday. Now, I never bet a game until I see the lineup. So I don't know who's going to play or who's not going to play because, you know, guys had 8-9 at-bats yesterday. They played till 1:40 in the morning, as you said. Who's going to play today? But neither team has got a strong starting pitcher starting today, and neither team has any bullpen left going into it. So, and the total today, as last I checked, was 8.5. So, again, a total under 9 with two teams that are dead over teams in the American League. You got to think that the over is going to be a good, strong play again today, provided that both teams are going to have their normal lineups starting today.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP, AM 1400 radio in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, live and worldwide simulcast on Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, professional sports bettor handicapper featured on my site, PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com. I just got off the phone about an hour ago with Tim Donaghy, the former NBA official. He now has a sports betting site called RefPicks.com. Tim will be joining us in the next week or two talking sports betting information. Brett Grant, the GM, KSHP, joining me Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Every Friday, Anthony Padilla is with me on The Odds Couple. We have the studio line open. We would love to field your calls. You want to talk sports, you want to talk sports betting, 702-221-7283. That's 702-221-7283. My good buddy Steve Cyan will be calling in, I'm guessing, at about 10:25, talking NFL draft. He's an expert when it comes to the draft, and it'd be kind of fun to talk a little football. It's never too early or too late to talk football.
No, yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk a lot about the draft yesterday, and it'll be interesting to see. Let me ask you, from a gambling perspective, if you go in now and you look at season win totals on teams based on the draft, you put a lot of stock in what a team did in the draft. When you're looking at win totals, potentially making a bet or a future play?
I don't. I put very little time and energy and effort because I see money is to be made today betting baseball. Okay. Sides, totals, money lines, and then NBA playoffs, sides, totals, first half, second half. So I'm preoccupied. I will look at it a little bit. I don't put a lot of stock into it. I mean, but I don't do a lot with total wins for the season. I don't like tying up my money for a three-hour baseball game. I'll go 5 innings for an hour and a half. I have commitment issues.
You can
imagine if I tie up 6, 8, 9 months on total wins, that will be posted here sooner than later. So I don't put a lot of stock into it, but fans certainly love it per their respective teams to see who. I'm guessing off the top of my head, the Minnesota Vikings, it would appear, had a very good draft, but we'll be talking to Steve when he calls in about 10:25 this morning.
Several teams did. I was just curious if you thought, like, hey, this running back fitting this system is a great move for this particular team. They had a need there. Now, if you draft a cornerback, it's hard to say what a cornerback might do for you or that, you know, offensive lineman might do. But if you get that one skill guy, then you're thinking, hey, suddenly that was the missing piece for that particular team. Like the Packers, for example, went out and got two running backs, Eddie Lacy from Alabama. And we know the Packers last year are a very good team, but they needed a running back. They went out and got that. Now, will that help their team or not when it comes to the win total or a Super Bowl future bet or something like that?
I think it most certainly would, because the running back position, a skilled position, but a young man's game, they picked up not one but two, a real weakness that they had a year ago. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP, simulcast live and worldwide, Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard with Brett Grant. Let's talk NBA basketball. The Houston Rockets responded last night. Game four, do or die. They did not want to get swept by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Number one taking on number eight. The big bad bullies on the block, the Thunder without one of their star players in Russell Westbrook. He's gone. Knee surgery, unfortunate for Thunder fans. But the Rockets came on last night. I love their team. Not a big fan of their coach, Kevin McHale. I love him as a player, as a coach. I have no idea what he's thinking half the time. But they did win the game 105-103, final score. The Houston Rockets, it's going to be fun now. Beverly, the rookie, going back, hostile environment, Oklahoma City, for game six, game
good,
five.
Yeah, good point. You look at what the Rockets did last night, and I thought the end of the game was a little interesting. You wonder what Kevin McHale was doing towards the end of the game, but I thought the last play of the game, when Jackson went in to try and tie the game, you know, Kevin Durant had the ball, had to give it up. I thought the Rockets did a nice job of forcing Durant very far away from the basket, and Durant was forced to pass the ball. It was bobbled by Jackson, who then realized that Durant wasn't going to be open for that last shot, which is obviously what Scott Brooks and the OKC Thunder wanted. And Jackson went to the basket, and I thought he was fouled. It was certainly a lot of contact. And then Serge Ibaka had a chance for a tip-in to force overtime at the buzzer and left it short. He wasn't too happy about that. But I thought they let him play a non-call. Maybe it was because it was a rookie going to the basket. But if that was Kevin Durant going to the basket, there would have been a whistle. I'm just saying there would have been a whistle.
I guarantee
you're right.
And there
probably should have been a whistle.
I guarantee. Yeah. It's home cooking.
Right.
Home cooking, because it certainly appeared to be a foul, but no excuse for Ibaka to miss the duck at the end for the game-tying field goal.
No question. It was just he kind of short-armed it. He looked like you going across the middle in a flag football game.
Everyone get out of my way.
Exactly. This thing does not have brakes. Slow down. But, you know, give the Rockets credit. They didn't get swept. And, you know, we have already seen two sweeps where teams weren't able to win a game on their home floor. And the Rockets played very well last night, except for in the fourth quarter. Only 14 points for them in the fourth quarter, but enough for them to win the game still.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Studio line is open, 702-221-7283. Scott Pritchard, Mike Side with Brett Grant. You know, something we wanted to talk about yesterday a little bit. We're talking NFL draft here in a few minutes with Steve Sion. But you talked about Tim Tebow, the fact that he's gone.
Well, the Jets now have five quarterbacks on their roster. They got rid of the sixth, and I would guess that Mark Sanchez will be one of the other. They have a guy named Matt Sims. Do you ever heard of Matt Sims before?
I have not.
He's one of their quarterbacks. They kept him. I have no idea who he is, but they kept him. The other four, by the way, are Geno Smith, who they just drafted.
Right.
David Garrard, who they brought in, who's about 74 years old. I think George Blanda might be a little bit younger.
I liked him, though, when he was at Jacksonville.
Yeah,
I thought it was competitive.
Well, that was like 8 years ago. Yeah. He's been delivering milk for the last 7 years. Of course, Mark Sanchez is still there, and McElroy, the quarterback who was from Alabama, national championship quarterback, who was their number three last year, who they bypassed for Tim Tebow. You know, I'm going to talk about this on Are You Kidding Me just a little bit with regards to Tim Tebow. And it was just a Jets debacle all the way around. We could talk about the merits of Tim Tebow as a quarterback or as a person or whatever, but the Jets absolutely butchered the entire Tim Tebow situation. Last year, remember last summer, we went through this whole thing. He's going to play 15 to 20 plays a game. We're going to have a specific package for him. And obviously, that didn't go well with Mark Sanchez. But when you look at Tebow's production on the field, while not great, I heard a guy this morning, a national broadcasters say he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the last 10 to 15 years of the National Football League, without question. I started to think on the way here, I'm thinking, did we not see Ryan Leaf and Akili Smith and Heath Schuler
yeah,
and Tim Couch and all these guys? Tim Tebow's record as a starter is a winning record. Now, we can go back and look at a lot of guys who've played in the National Football League who never had a winning record. Now, could Tim Tebow throw the football very well? No. But could he lead his team and find ways to win games, at least help his team win games? Yes, we saw that. He walked into a situation in Denver where Kyle Orton was there and the Broncos were, 1-4? And then Tim Tebow came in and was the starter. And there aren't many teams, and Scott, I know you know the history of the National Football League, that start out 1-4 where that team still makes the playoffs. Those teams are few and far between. Now, how much credit Tebow deserves, that's for debate. He did then win a playoff game against a very good Pittsburgh Steelers team. Yes, they got hammered the next week by the New England Patriots against a great Patriot team and Tom Brady, but they weren't expected to win that. They weren't expected to win the game against Pittsburgh. They weren't expected to go to the playoffs. But yet, the quarterback gets all the credit. Quarterback gets all the blame. In New York, I think the Jets management completely mishandled Tebow. They should have never brought him in if they were never planning on using him.
See, that's my point. It's like, I don't know why we continue to talk about a quarterback who had 39 more passing yards than me.
Right.
39 passing yards. So why bring him in if you're not going to use him? Again, I think he's a complete fraud, a complete bust. And as far as the Denver Broncos, the 1 year when he did play for them, they did come from nowhere to make the playoffs. But as I was telling Scott Whitney, the executive producer, yesterday, I think that had more to do with a tremendous defense, a pretty good running game, and home field advantage, because the fact is they were at home as a 4 seed, right, simply because they won the division and they knocked off Pittsburgh. But Denver, they do not lose at home anyway. But then the next week, as a double-digit dog, lost by 30 to the New England Patriots.
Well, they were in a bad division that year. I mean, the Raiders were bad. The Chargers were decimated by injuries. The Chiefs were bad. And they were the best of a bad division in that particular year. I don't disagree with you. But to say that he's a bust when he never really has had the opportunity to play in New York, he never started a game in New York. So how can you call a guy a bust if he never had the opportunity to start a game? Now, Mark Sanchez last year was a bust, but you can't really call a guy a bust who never got the opportunity. So it was a busted opportunity for the Jets. They should have never brought him in. Tebow made a mistake by agreeing to go to New York. He could have gone to Jacksonville, where he would have been a hero back there in the Gainesville area, where he was a star at the University of Florida, and all things would have been wonderful probably for Tim Tebow. I'll give him credit for saying, you know what, I'll take that challenge. I'll go to the spotlight. I'll go to the limelight. You can't really attack Tebow from a credibility standpoint, a character standpoint, the intestinal fortitude that guy has developed. He takes a lot of grief. And we talk about Jason Collins yesterday, who says, I'm gay, a guy who averages 1 point a game for the season and is 7 feet tall. What? If I were 7 feet tall with the basketball skills that I have currently at 46 years old, I promise you I would average more than 1 point a game. Of course, I'd have to get in the game. I would average more than 1 point a game.
Yeah, for the year this year.
I could make a layup. I could make a free throw. I mean, Jacob and I were talking before the show, Jacob Cannon, and he's saying, wait a second, one free throw, that means he misses the other one all the time, right? I could get 2 points.
He averaged. Collins averaged 1 point, one rebound per game.
Right. So here's the thing. Tim Tebow, and he gets probably a bad word, crucified or persecuted for his religious faith, okay? And the media basically tells us him to shut up about his religion. And here's Jason Collins on the other side who says, I'm gay, and he's a hero. I've got a little bit of a problem with that.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio. The studio line is open, 702-221-7283. Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant. We're live and worldwide on Vegas Video Network. This show goes Monday through Thursday with Brett and myself, and then every Friday from 10 to 11 o'clock with my good buddy Anthony Padilla. I believe we have my good buddy Steve Sion on the phone.
Do.
Steve, happy Tuesday, young man.
How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to The Odds Couple. How's everything going?
Ready to rock and roll to discuss what happened in the NFL draft.
Well, I've been singing a song about how good you are in analyzing the NFL draft. So let's get started with, first of all, the first pick, Fisher going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Do you think that was the right call, and does he fill a need?
Well, he definitely fills a need, and the only question was whether or not they were going to take Jokel or Fisher. Jokel was probably the safer pick out of the SEC, a little more experienced, It's interesting the way these general managers think of things. They take Eric Fisher because they think he has a little more athleticism and upside. But if Joe Staley hadn't come out of Central Michigan and been so successful, they never would have probably taken Eric Fisher number one. So it's kind of interesting. But he is a solid pick, and he is a good player, and he's going to be there for years to come.
Well, you talked about the SEC. Let's compare the SEC compared to the Big Ten. I mean, Brett, my co-host, and I were talking about this yesterday, that the SEC, if I am correct here, 34 players taken as opposed to 9 out of the Big Ten.
Just on the top four teams, it was actually 63 players from the SEC overall.
But as far as the top four teams.
The top four teams from each division, a huge difference. In fact, the Big Ten's top four versus Alabama had 9. Alabama had 9 by themselves versus the Big Ten's 9 guys out of the Big Four competition.
Well, it's real simply. If I start an expansion team with the NFL, all I would ask would be for exclusive rights to the SEC players for a year or two, and I would be just fine really quick. There's no comparison in the two divisions. It's conferences. It's ridiculous.
Steve, I'm interested about a couple of things. The quarterback positions, obviously we were surprised that E.J. Manuel was the number one quarterback taken by the Buffalo Bills, who obviously had a need in that spot. Maybe they took him way too early. I think if they liked him, they probably still could have drafted him at least a round or two later. But there were teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New York Giants, both with established quarterbacks, who drafted quarterbacks. Were you surprised by that?
Not only did the Giants and Steelers get it right, they understand what the draft is all about. And it's one word, value.
Right.
And the problem with E.J. Manuel is a lot of people have him as his fifth or sixth rated quarterback in the draft. But that doesn't matter. Buffalo could have been sold on E.J. Manuel. What they fail to understand is what the draft is all about. It's selecting a player before somebody else selects the player that you want, hence the definition of value. As you so aptly stated, E.J. Manuel was probably going to be there in the fourth round. You had Barkley, you had Nassib, you had Landry Jones. I mean, there was no rush to take E.J. Manuel. The fact remains is there was only one playmaker in this entire draft. His name is Tavon Austin.
And the Rams got him with their first
round. I had announced, by the way, on my draft board, I predicted that there was going to be a trade for the Rams and the Bills, and that the Rams would take Tavon Austin at 8, and that Buffalo would make a mistake and take a quarterback at 16. Well, I actually predicted that exact scenario.
Wow, and the Rams made that move specifically to get in front of the New York Jets, who also needed a wide receiver.
They opened their darn mouths too soon.
Right.
They opened their darn mouths too soon, so St. Louis moved right ahead of them. If they just stayed quiet and said, oh, my God, we're going to take one of the top defensive players in the draft and shut their mouths, they would have gotten Tavon Austin.
They might have. Let me ask you one more thing. You talk about value. A year ago, Matt Barkley would have been a top 5 draft pick in the draft, at least top 10. This year, he's the number one draft pick in the fourth round, or the first guy taken in the fourth round. Not only did he, obviously, he cost himself a lot of money, but a tremendous amount of value for the Philadelphia Eagles to go out and get Matt Barkley in the fourth round.
Great value. All these guys, the teams that sat back and waited for these quarterbacks to fall to them absolutely did the right thing. In the last 5 years, quarterbacks are always what I call overdrafted. They're pushed up and up because teams want to fill positions of need. And they force the quarterback into where he doesn't belong. Now, in Emmanuel's case, the really pathetic thing about this is, you know, I'm not crazy about the kid, but he's got a lot of physical talent. I don't see the reading of the field. I don't see the accuracy. I see he makes mistakes, puts the ball on the ground. But maybe he can develop. Maybe get some good coaching, develop. But when you're a first-round draft choice as a quarterback, the pressure is immense. It's going to be immense on Buffalo to play him too soon, so they're almost setting him up to failure. And that's the biggest problem. Now, Nassib, for example, I mean, he gets to sit behind Eli Manning.
Right.
It's a perfect situation. He can sit and develop for 3 or 4 years. God forbid, Eli gets hurt. Who knows? But what's smart about this is the Giants get, or the Steelers, they get to showcase him or Landry Jones over exhibition, over a couple of meaningless games at the end of the season, or if there's one game that they sit out and get hurt and they play and they look really good, all of a sudden, 3 years from now, they trade him for like a second-round draft choice, a la, you know, Kevin Cobb, what the Eagles did.
Or Matt Flynn.
It's
right.
Great value.
Yeah, or a Matt Flynn who did that, you know, Monday Night Football game exactly. against the Patriots.
So there's two things that these general managers don't get. The first thing is value. They really just don't understand value. And, of course, along with E.J. Manuel, the most questionable pick of the first round was the Cowboys. The Cowboys have no clue, basically, and that's because Jerry Jones is pathetic and insists on running the team. But they drafted a very solid player named Travis Frederick out of Wisconsin. Fine. He's probably the best center in the draft, yada, yada, yada. So what? He had a second or third round grade. You were sitting at 18. There was no reason in the world to trade down 13 spots with San Francisco to get Travis Frederick. It just doesn't make any sense. At 18, they certainly could have taken Desmond Trufant. They could have taken Sharif Floyd. They could have taken Xavier Rhodes, Dante Jones, or Sylvester Williams, which I thought would have been great to fill in on the defensive line. So they got no value. Then you have other drafts, like, for example, Miami moved up from 12 to 3. Now, whether or not you like Deion Jordan, I happen to like the guy, but he's kind of a hit-or-miss kind of guy. He's kind of like a JPP guy that may... He may turn into Jason Taylor type, but he is a little bit thin and he doesn't have that much experience. But Miami gave up virtually nothing to Oakland. Oakland moved down from 3 to 12, and they got nothing in return. On the flip side, the 49ers moved up from 31 to 18 and gave up nothing to the Cowboys, relatively speaking.
Right.
So I thought the 49ers did phenomenal. Now, on the flip side of that, you look at a team like the Minnesota Vikings. Now, they sat there, and they sat there, and they were rewarded by having Sharif Floyd fall into their laps at 23 and Xavier Rhodes at 25. Now, Sharif Floyd was rated on most boards as a top 10 guy, but he fills a particular need. Kevin Williams is getting a little long in the tooth, and he's a good 4-3 defensive tackle, so he has a lot of value. And Xavier Rhodes was probably one of the three or four best corners in the draft. So they got top-quality talent at need. You can't fight that. But then they went ahead, and first of all, the NFL should make a rule. You cannot trade with the New England Patriots, all right? Because all they want to do is steal the gold from your teeth. Now, I don't have a problem with Cordero Patterson at 29. He's a little bit of a one-hit wonder, and I'm not real crazy about taking wide receivers in the first round of the draft anyway, unless they're guys named Calvin Johnson or Andre Johnson. Maybe you just have to be named Johnson. I don't know.
Exactly.
You know, Larry Fitzgerald, Julio Jones, A.J. Green. Those are the five guys that I gave first-round grades in the last basically 10 years, 12 years. So, but they let the New England Patriots just totally fleece them. They gave away a second, a third, a fourth, and a seventh. I mean, on the flip side, Dallas moves from 18 to 31, and they get one pick. They get a second-round pick extra. I mean, so you shouldn't be allowed to trade with the Patriots. But Minnesota did a lot of good. St. Louis did phenomenal. Not only did they grab Austin, but then they moved back down in the draft and got Alec Ogletree to fit a real need in inside linebacker. And I know he has a little off-field issues, but, you know, the guy is a player. He just makes plays. So they really got the draft right, and they understood the draft. And then there are teams like my Jets. My Jets almost got it right. They should have sat there and shut their mouths, and then they could have probably had Austin at number 9. Instead, they got D. Milner, and he fits a need. He's a cornerback. He's probably good. He's the best physical cornerback in the draft. I do worry about his history of injuries. And there were several different quarterbacks that were available. So I would have rather preferred Austin. Then at 13, they take Sheldon Richardson, who, by the way, is a great football player.
Terrific player.
At Missouri. But he's a 4-3 defensive tackle, right, a la, you know, Warren Sapp type. Well, what the hell is Rex going to do with Sheldon Richardson? They already got a couple of 3-4, five technique defensive ends in Copels and Wilkerson, who were great. So why are you grabbing a 4-3 defensive tackle? I mean, he's great value, great player, but he doesn't fit. You flip to the New York Giants in the second round, they grab this guy Hankins out of Ohio State, who's basically a big fat slob. Now, you want to plug him in as a nose tackle in your 3-4? Great. Except for one thing, the Giants play a 4-3 system. So what are they doing grabbing these guys? So the fact remains is that these general managers consistently do two things. They overvalue, particularly quarterbacks, and they say, oh, this was my guy, and they grab him. And then they also grab guys that don't even fit their scheme. So, you know, that's the biggest problem. And I just one time I want to see a general manager come out after the draft and say, instead of saying, oh, our first two round picks, these were two of our top 20 rated players in the draft. I just want one guy to have the guts to stand up and say, you know what, the guys we wanted, we blew it. They went before what we wanted, so we reached for this other guy. But they'll never say that. They'll lose their job.
That's true.
Steve, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I mean, you are the man when it comes to the NFL draft, man-to-man, friend-to-friend. Let me just say, Steve, that Mel Kiper has nothing on you.
Yeah, well Mel Kiper, he was great in his time. He's great, but he sort of overplayed his hand a little bit. I'll tell you, guys that really know the NFL now, Charles Davis really knows the NFL, Mike Mayock, and Todd McShay. Those boys really know their stuff.
You have a good
day. Really
we'll be in touch. I really appreciate you calling in. Steve Sion,
right,
joining
luck,
us.
Boys.
Thanks, you, Steve. All right. You're listening to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network, simulcast live on KSHP AM 1400 radio right here, Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. We're going to get right to it with Spin to Win. I'll bring in the wheel. We have pro basketball, NBA playoff game, critical game 5 tonight. The Clippers are in LA Staples Center hosting the Memphis Grizzlies. The Clippers are favored by 5. This is a part of the show. We call it Spin to Win. Emotions cloud judgment. So the idea here is successful sports bettors bet with their head, never their heart. I'm going to spin to win. Wherever it lands, I have to force an argument for why there might be value with this team, because a smart bettor knows that you have to make an argument for either side before you step up to the bet window with your hard-earned cash. So we have the Grizzlies on the road. It's tied 2-2. They're taking on the LA Clippers. Clippers are favored by 5, and I have Does that say Grizzlies?
It says Grizzlies.
Okay. I didn't know it was going to be in Spanish today.
Apparently Scott's still hungover as he was filling that out.
So the Memphis Grizzlies plus the points. This team, or hieroglyphics, I mean, what is this? I can't even say the word.
I think I saw that on a cave not too long ago, yes.
So I guess I have the Grizzlies plus the 5 points. This these two teams are pretty evenly matched. It really comes down to home court. The L.A. Clippers won the first two games in L.A. The other two games in Memphis, the Grizzlies held serve. So it's 2-2, game 5. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, the Grizzlies plus the 5, I mean, points mean more than opinions. Underdogs are oftentimes undervalued, so the Memphis Grizzlies, with their staunch, outstanding defense, will slow this game down. The total, I believe, is about 180 points, so it's projected to be a low-scoring game. The Grizzlies would have it no other way. They like to slow it down, half-court set, play in mud. The Grizzlies plus the 5, ring up the ringer, see the cashier.
Hey, Chris Paul, the best player on the floor for either team, is saying that this game is the biggest game of our season, and he's right. Game 5 of any playoff series, when the series is tied 2-2 and you're the home team, you've got now a 3-game series. You got to win 2 games, and you have 2 games on your home floor. He's right. They can't afford to lose this game tonight. They went on the road and did not play well on the road, but they've been very, very good at home. I like the home team in this spot. Give me 5 points. Don't think it matters. I think the Clippers go in, and you'll see a very inspired effort from the Clippers today with Chris Paul and of course, Griffin and the crew and DeAndre Jordan and Caron Butler. The pressure is on the Clippers. But game five at home, this is what you play for. You play for home court advantage, and they've got it tonight. They can't let it go. Big night for the Clippers.
Well, the Clippers, they've done extremely well at home all year. I love their bench. Their Achilles heel is they don't rebound the ball very well, which is a strength for Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Tony Allen. These guys for the Grizzlies, they're awesome. This team was made for the playoffs. Tayshaun Prince, he's long, he's athletic, he's a good team player, a good role player. It's going to be a very interesting matchup tonight when the Clippers take on the Grizzlies.
By the way, that game will be heard right here tonight on AM 1400 at 7:30 with the Clippers and the Grizzlies. That will not carry the Dodger game tonight, so keep that in mind. Dodger fans will have the Clippers on instead tonight.
In addition to broadcasting all the Clipper games, the Dodger games, we also broadcast the Dallas Cowboys football games, BYU football. So this is pretty exciting here at KSHP.
Anthony will be very excited to know that Steve agreed with him about his drafting of a center in the first round for his Are You Kidding Me from last Friday.
Well, again, I thought Steve, obviously well-versed, very educated when it comes to the NFL draft. I'm telling you, no one is sharper. No one knows more when it comes to the NFL draft than my buddy Steve. I thought he was a great, great guest. Disappointed that we had to cut him off a little bit because we only have a 60-minute show. But man, yeah, Anthony will be excited because, again, he kind of echoed Anthony's point that, hey, man, a center is important, but that guy would have been there in the second, third round,
right?
Probably.
And there's multiple centers. In fact, the Rams drafted a center, the kid from Alabama. Remember the fight in the national championship game between the center and the quarterback for Alabama? The Rams drafted that guy, and I think in like the fifth or sixth round. So
right.
He was an All-American at Alabama, and they got him late, and the Cowboys went up in the first round and traded to get to that guy. By the way, the other games in the NBA today, I know you're nervous. You might be saying goodbye to those beautiful locks. Warriors and Nuggets in Denver tonight. You need a Nugget victory, Scott. Otherwise, Friday, Anthony's going to be, he's bringing the Clippers. You know, he's bringing them with him.
Even when my good buddy Anthony Padilla is not in the studio, he continues to haunt me. We have a friendly wager. It's about to become unfriendly because I'm about to lose. The wager is Anthony said something ridiculous, which is something he does on a daily basis, but the sickening part is he's oftentimes right. He liked the Warriors to upset the Denver Nuggets. It's like, I'll take that bet you're going to regret. He said, hey, will you shave your head if they lose? I said, absolutely. Well, now the Nuggets are down 3-1. Nuggets have to win three consecutive games, or I guess I have to get rid of my hair. So
well,
I'm not happy about this.
Another story, Catherine Zeta-Jones, who was in your movie, Lay the Favorite, apparently she saw the movie, and now she is in a bipolar mental facility.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I know Bruce Willis and Catherine Zeta-Jones. I mean, Lay the Favorite, I loved it because I guess I knew the characters. But as far as Bruce Willis and Catherine Zeta-Jones, I mean, the critics did not like the movie. And Willis and Jones do not want to be associated with the movie. So my question and my challenge for you, the viewer.
Apparently that's thrown her into a depression.
I'm guessing.
Monster depression.
I'm wondering. But for you, the viewer and the listener, go out, rent the movie, Lay the Favorite, to see just how bad this movie is. But I loved it because it's about my friend Beth. It's about my buddy Dink. I'm very familiar with Dink's wife. And, of course, Vince Vaughn plays a big-time illegal bookmaker.
Right.
All-star lineup, but the movie fell short, according to the critics.
Ironically, her character in the movie is probably her in real life because character in the movie that Catherine Zeta-Jones plays, Dink's wife, apparently she had a dark side to her, and Catherine Zeta-Jones has that dark side as well. So she might have just been hanging out normal with her laying in bed half the movie.
Well, in the movie, Dink's wife is Tulip, but in real life, her name is Gail. And don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. The fact is, Gail is an absolute sweetheart.
Oh, that's good.
So, but Hollywood obviously will sensationalize and come up with a dark side. I don't think there's a dark side to Gail. I mean, she's an absolute angel. So
I saw the movie and I enjoyed it because I liked the storyline of the gambling aspect of it but I thought her I've seen Catherine Zeta-Jones a couple of times now in recent movies. She was in that god-awful movie Rock of Ages as well, and the last three or four movies she's been in have been horrible from her role standpoint, have been just terrible. So I would think that that is probably why she's been depressed recently. Although she's getting fat checks.
She's getting what, fat checks or fat cheeks?
Fat.
I've got fat cheeks. She's getting fat checks. I wish I was getting fat checks.
Her cheeks still look all right. Lucky Michael Douglas. Not sure how that one worked out, but okay.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Scott Pritchard with Brett Grant. Brett is the GM here at KSHP. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on PritchardsPicks.com, VegasInsider.com, Tim Donahue's site, RefPicks.com. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever thought you should be on the radio? Or have you considered doing an online video show or podcast? If so, now is your only chance to do both at the same time. KSHP and the Vegas Video Network have teamed up to provide the only multi-camera, broadcast-quality video and live radio simulcast in Las Vegas. And instead of having your show played at some ungodly hour, the KSHP Vegas Video Network partnership is producing shows that play from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Imagine having your own radio show broadcasting to the entire Las Vegas Valley, and combine that with an online presence that is viewed in all 50 states and 150 countries, both live and on demand. This is a first and an outstanding opportunity to give voice to your business, your ideas, and your talent. If you'd like your own show on KSHP and the Vegas Video Network, contact us today at 221-1200. That's 221-1200.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas, Nevada. Simulcast live and worldwide, Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard with Brett Grant. We're here Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Brett takes a break on Friday. I bring in the original anchor co-host of the show, my good buddy Anthony Padilla, Fridays from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. We would like for you to reach out to us on The Odds Couple. Email us at oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. That's oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. Also, we have web-based voicemail. Go to our site, Vegas Video Network. On the right-hand side, there's a red bar. Click there. Middle of the page, a green bar. Hit the Start Record button. We have live chat questions. Keep those coming. We fielded one of those yesterday. And live studio line is open, 702-221-7283. You want to talk sports, namely sports betting. Now, if you do miss us live, no worries. Reach out to us on Vegas Video Network, YouTube, iTunes, Roku. In the world of sports, you don't have to look far to find frustration. Are you kidding me?
I get to go first again. You are so darn nice to me.
I'm too nice. I've been too nice for too long.
I'm going to go with, are you kidding me, back to Tim Tebow a little bit, because of the fact that, you know, we all, as parents, we always tell our children to strive to be the best they can be. We tell them you're going to have to overcome adversity. Your hard work is going to pay off. When people tell you something you can't do, the harder you work, you're going to be able to tell those people that you can do it. Tim Tebow, his entire life, has been told you can't be a quarterback. You can't be a quarterback. You can't be a quarterback. Yet he was successful in high school. He was successful at the University of Florida, won two national championships. He got into the NFL despite all the odds against him that he wasn't good enough to be an NFL quarterback. And yet he's been bashed and bashed and bashed along the way, yet he still developed a thick skin. He went through and survived it and did it with great integrity, great character, against a lot of odds from the standpoint of being told you couldn't do it. Just, here's my thing. Are you kidding me? Enough with the Tebow bashing. He is, should be, a, and he is, a role model to millions of people who took a limited amount of talent with determination, hard work, overcoming adversity to make himself something, to do what he wanted to do. He is the American dream in that regard, to take a desire and a dream with a little bit of talent and an enormous amount of hard work to turn himself into an NFL quarterback. He should be applauded, not persecuted, enough with the persecution of Tim Tebow. Are you kidding me?
You know, I always bust Anthony Padilla's chops, accusing him of having a man crush on LeBron James. What's with the man crush on Tim Tebow?
It's not a man crush, as much
as
it is. As much as it is, you want to tell your kids, look how hard this guy worked to achieve what he wanted in his life, and yet there's so many people who tell him he can't do it. Yet it didn't matter to him. I think it's as opposed to other people who have immense talent who don't work hard, who are handed everything in their lives, and we see those people as these tragic stories, or we try to turn a hero out of somebody who doesn't deserve it. This guy is a hero, in my opinion.
Is that right? A guy he cannot throw a nice spiral pass.
He got a job in the NFL as a quarterback.
He did, but we're talking about a guy still that had 39 yards passing. Are you kidding me?
Well, yeah, but he never started a game, so you can't take last year as an example. He didn't even get the chance last year. He would have thrown more than 39 yards had he played and had the opportunity to throw last year.
Well, we're going to get to my Are You Kidding Me segment. I'm talking about the Houston Rockets. Yes, congratulations. You won the game last night by 2 to stay alive. But it's really more about Kevin McHale. I've said before, Brett, that I loved him as a player, not sold as a coach. I mean, the Houston Rockets, they were at home. They play hard. I mean, let us not forget, this. The Thunder are in trouble. Forget this series. They're in trouble because Westbrook is out. Lynn didn't even play last night for the Rockets, and the Rockets won the game by 2. And for all intent and purpose, game 3, the Rockets had well in hand until the last minute of the game when Durant hit a crazy 3-point shot. But I look at this Rockets team, and here's the concern. Inside of 2 minutes to go on last night's game, the Rockets were up 7. The Thunder have the ball, Durant offensive foul. So you have a 7-point lead, less than 2 minutes to go. You're at home. What do? They turn it over. And then Durant hit a 3. Now the Rockets come down. James Harden, instead of passing and setting picks and moving and cutting to the basket, what do? He forces up. He stands and dribbles. Fires up an off-balance, weak 3, contested. And then Durant came down, slam dunk. Now it's a 2-point game. Again, what do the Rockets do? They come down, they stand around, he dribbles out the clock, and then fires up a 3 and complains to the official that he was fouled. Go to the basket. They were fortunate to come out of there with the win. Kevin McHale, what are you telling these players during the timeouts? Are you kidding me?
He was fouled, but I agree with you 100%. You can't stand out there, dribble for 20 seconds, and then settle for that same shot. At some point, you either pass the ball to somebody who's cutting to the basket, or you get to the basket and get to the free throw line and maybe make a couple of foul shots. But you can't settle in a 2-point game for a 20-foot jump shot without ever having ball movement. That's the easiest thing to defend for the Oklahoma City Thunder in that spot. The amazing thing was, despite his stupidity, the Houston Rockets are still playing basketball.
They did win the game, but that was based on what they did up to that point. Can you imagine Michael Jordan just dribbling out the clock and firing up a 3 on 2 consecutive possessions? No, man. He would go to the basket knowing that you're going to get the benefit of the call. You're going to get a couple of cheap points from the free throw line. So I was very disappointed in James Harden, not once, but twice late in the game to just settle for that. They were very fortunate to win the game. Good news for Rocket fans. They did this without Lynn.
Yeah, and he had a chest contusion, right? Will he be back for game 5?
He's questionable.
Okay.
But I would expect that he
will be
back. Yeah, on a day-to-day basis. Day-to-day, we're day-to-day, you and me. We're day-to-day. All right, this is the part of the show where Brett Grant and I put money into your pocket as we together put you on the right side.
Right side again for us on a Tuesday. Yesterday, to recap, we already talked about it a little bit. I got the miracle over yesterday of the 6.5 with the Marlins and the Mets. I'm going to stick to baseball. I'm going to go to the Arizona Diamondbacks, 15-11 on the season, hosting the San Francisco Giants in this spot. It is Madison Bumgarner on the mound against Trevor Cahill. And I'm going to go to the total, Scott, at 8 in this spot. There's 4 pitchers, ironically, who are pitching today in Major League Baseball that have been great under pitchers so far. Trevor Cahill is one of those guys. 5 starts, 5 unders. Going to stick to it today as well. He's a guy who's only 1-3 on the season, but he gives you 6 or 7 strong innings every time out. He only gives up a run or two allowed in at that time, and every game has been under the total for him, including a 3-2 win against Colorado earlier the week, a previous start against the Dodgers, a 1-0 game. His totals have been way under the total. I'll stick to the under 8 here today with Cahill against Bumgarner with the Diamondbacks and the Giants.
Before we get to my right side, I'm looking at a baseball game today, but yesterday I looked at a basketball game and cost me some money, my friends. It cost me some money. I'm not happy. I'm in a foul mood. Two things I'm upset about. One, it's one thing if I cost myself money, but I cost my buddy Dink money. Dink and I talked yesterday. Fortunately or unfortunately for him, he respects my opinion when it comes to sports betting.
Oops.
He said, who do you like in basketball? I said, listen, man, I like the Pacers plus the 2, but plus 1.5 is a bargain. What happened? The Pacers lost. I hate it when that happens. It's the nature of the beast. Break-even point, 52.4% ATS against the spread. That means, boys and girls, you have to be right 11 times out of 21. What makes you think that you can hit 50% flipping a coin? That's what we're looking at here. Sportsbooks will set that line to where it's a 50-50 prop. What makes you think you can hit 50%, not to mention 52.4%? We are in business for business. We better be hitting 55, 58% long-term, which can be very, very lucrative as long as you can do that. Easier said than done. Fortunately, in the Superbook contest, two of the 3 years I was in that, season-long, 85 games, top five games every week, I was at 60, 61%. Winner. I mentioned that my lady friend Patricia Townsend was the first and only woman to win that contest. She won $114,000 in 1999. We will have her on the show one day once we get closer to football season. I'm not stalling. I want to get to my winner chicken dinner today. I'm thinking, okay, who do I have today? What else can I talk about?
I don't know either. Yeah.
Major League Baseball game. I'm looking at the Twins taking on the Tigers. Verlander is going for the Tigers. Worley is the starting pitcher for the Minnesota Twins. Now, what's interesting here, the total for this contest, 7.5 over is -120. So they're shading the over a little bit. Now you have Verlander, who's a star, especially at home. But if you look at the ERA for Worley, 6.38, it's early. It's a small sample size, but he's been perfect. He's 0-3, so he's not very good. The Tigers at home, you would expect they would hit. I think it's an underlay with Verlander getting a little too much respect here. I look for a relatively high-scoring game. This total is simply too low. 7.5 is a bit cheap. Again, key number total American League is 9. National League, we know it is 7. So if you look at the whip, walks, hits per innings pitch for Worley, 1.83. For Verlander, 1.24. That's what you want to look at when handicapping pitchers. Plus, I do not like... never been sold on the Tiger bullpen. You would expect Verlander to go deep into the game, but I don't like their closer. I don't like their middle relievers. So the bargain, the value, Red Rover, I love the over.
Interesting thing in this particular game, Verlander against the Twins, 9-0 in his last 9 starts against them, and 8 of those 9 games have been decided by more than one run. If you take a big favorite like Verlander, I know this is not your play. I think Verlander's -$2.30 today. Do you ever play the run line in a big favorite like this spot?
I would prefer to, well, again, I'm big with pluses. So I would, instead of laying 230, 250, 260, I would lay the 1.5, get a small plus or a small minus. But more importantly than that, because I don't trust the bullpen, the middle relievers, and the closer, I oftentimes will look to bet the first 5 innings of a game. Because, again, the odds are pretty consistent and conducive to the full game odds. So, but, again, I will not take Verlander minus the big fat lumber. I deal with pluses, not minuses. And as good as Verlander is, and as good as the Tigers are, a team that went to the World Series last year, Verlander is 2-2. That's a losing proposition if you just blindly bet him. But I prefer betting first 5 innings as opposed to the run lines. But if I do bet run lines, I want pluses. For Brett Grant, I'm Scott Pritchard. This is the Odds Couple. We'll check you out tomorrow.